our wine expert, Tyson Stelzer. So we're privileged to have a multi-award-winning wine commentator with us as a regular part of our team here at Travel Writers Radio. He's just back from Adelaide, where the winner of the Great Australian Red was announced, and he's going to tell you who that was or what wine that was, and we'll find out about that. But given that this is spring, it's also traditional to turn to bubbly drinks, and we'll ask him how we can drink local maybe instead of quaffing all that imported fizz. I spoke to Tyson just a few moments before we came on air. We're back on the line from Brisbane, where he hails. Well, doesn't actually hail, but he lives there right now. It's Tyson Stelzer, our wine expert. Tyson, welcome back to Travel Writers Radio.
Hello, Graham. I'm actually in Brisbane right now, though it's a rare thing for me these days. Since I spoke to you last, I've hosted a tour in Champagne. I've done showcase events in San Francisco and New York. I've just come back from Adelaide, where I've been judging yesterday, and about to head to Tasmania and Perth for events coming up over the coming weeks. So it's a busy event time of the year. It's wine season, and I'm not quite sure where I am from one day to the next.
Well, it sounds like you sound more like a travel writer with benefits.
Yeah, well, wine is such an international currency when it comes to travel. So the chance to not only take people to the great wine regions of the world, but also to showcase the great wines of Australia in the key markets around the world. I'm off to Hong Kong next year to do a whole series of events there, and showcasing wines increasingly in across the Americas, very important markets for us, and of course Europe.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, this is the time of year when we start to think about those GGs roaring down the main straight at Flemington and other places.
Exactly.
And invariably there's the sound of fizz in the background. What do you think we ought to be looking for this year? I know lots of people go a bit mad during the racing season and pull out all the French grog, but we've got pretty good stuff here, haven't we?
It is sparkling season, that's for certain, and there's nothing better than champagne. But as you rightly say, there are some great Australian sparklings. I really think Aussie sparkling has come of age even in the last 5 years, and the way in which the wines are now being awarded in the wine shows, recognised around the world. My showcases in New York and San Francisco were focusing primarily on Tasmanian sparkling, with some Tasmanian still Pinots and Chardonnays on the side. And I tell you what, the response in a market even as far away as New York and San Francisco, where they really don't see very much of these wines at all, is quite incredible. Tasmania produces less than 1% of Australia's wines, and of that less than 1%, less than 5% of that gets sent overseas. So we're privileged to have most of the Tassie wines for ourselves here in Australia.
Mm.
And for me, if I'm drinking sparkling and not spending a bit more and doing something quite special with champagne, it's Tassie that I drink all the time.
Now, they're not just being polite New Yorkers to you, are they?
No, they're quite honest and quite open about these things, and had some very frank conversations with key media and key sommeliers and wine buyers and also wine public around the styles of Australian wine, because obviously traditionally it's been more full-bodied South Australian red wines that have established Australia's reputation, particularly in America.
Mm.
Those wines perhaps sit stylistically more naturally next to, you know, Napa Cabernets and other styles that they make themselves very well. But tastes are changing in Australia and around the world, and there is great interest in the more elegant, cool climate styles. And Tasmania is our cool climate capital, of course, cool by latitude, not by altitude, which makes for beautifully refined wines.
Mm. So when you pour them a glass, is it a blind tasting that they undertake, or do they know full well up front that this is from Van Diemen's Land?
Exactly. So in these particular tastings, they were all wines that they knew what they were drinking, but I've done lots of blind tastings over the past year too, and I'm back to Tasmania for the big Effervescence Festival again next month. And last year we did some big tastings there of top sparkling wines from all around the world, and the Tasmanians performed extremely well and in fact topped one of the tastings with the proud favourite blind tasting, even against some good champagnes.
Right. So here in Australia, 95% of it's still here. We better get drinking before someone else gets onto it and we lose another 10%
exactly.
Offshore. What should we be looking for, Tyson? What brands?
Some of my favourites are wines like, for value for money, the Ninth Island Rosé is beautifully refined, made by Natalie Fry, who used to be the winemaker for Jantz and is now looking after Ninth Island and Piper's Brook and Craiglinger, but significantly and most importantly at the premium end, she's also making a brand new wine called Bellebonne, B-E-L-L-E-B-O-N-N-E, and that's the latest ultra boutique, very tiny production, very refined Tasmanian sparkling to look for.
Okay. Now, the Ninth Island Rosé, is that one of these light-coloured rosés?
It's pale, but it's beautiful. It's got some body because it's mostly Pinot Noir, but it is very much elegant in its cool aspirations because it comes from the Piper's River region, which in northern Tasmania is actually one of the coolest wine-growing regions in Tassie.
Right. And what would we expect to pay for the premium product, the Bellebonne?
Bellebonne is about $65 and the Ninth Island is typically under $25. Bellebonne, hard to find. You need to look that one up and buy it direct from Nat. If you Google it, you'll be able to find her. And order some gin as well. Her Able Gin Company is fantastic. And the Ninth Island more readily available in local
Well,
wine
I'm
stores.
Just thinking, as you say, $55, you pay a lot more for some of the French champagnes.
Exactly.
Here in Australia?
It's kind of an entry French pricing at around $65 for Bellebonne. And to me, that's amazing for a great boutique Australian vintage sparkling wine.
Right. Now, if you're not a sparkling drinker, and I'm probably not really, I'll be polite and have one, but it's got a bit sweet in sometimes for me. What else is out there that you think goes down well during our spring and into our summer?
Right, so the latest news is that I've literally just a few hours ago returned from Adelaide, where we judged the Great Australian Red, my blend of Cabernet and Shiraz competition, which is now in its 13th year. And we had an amazing result this year. We had the third largest number of entries in the history of the competition and had an amazing surprise winner, because when we judge these wines, we have 13 judges across two panels who judge every single wine, so it's much more rigorous than a normal show. And the result of that is that we see some consistency in the results, even with different judges from one year to the next.
Right.
And in fact, the winner of this year's competition was the very same wine that won last year. And it's an incredible tribute to the wine and to its maker, and also to the consistency of the judges. But the wine is also incredibly value for money. It's Pepper Jack's certified Shiraz Cabernet, and it's under $30, and it beat everything in the competition, even up to $300 a bottle.
Are you kidding? That's
fair. It's a blind competition. The wines are on the table next to each other.
Yeah.
The judges had no idea what they were judging or the prices, and our $30 wine came up on top 2 years in a row with a different set of judges. Amazing result.
Now, Pepper Jack, I know. I'm not sure if it's the certified that I'm drinking, though. That's one you have to look for, that particular...
There are three or four different tiers under Pepper Jack now. Richard Matner is the winemaker. He's been extending the portfolio to include some different styles, and certified as one of their more premium wines. It's under $30. It's available in some of the mainstream stores like Dan Murphy's.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a little more expensive than the plain Pepper Jack Shiraz Cabernet. This is Booker certified on the label.
And where is it made for our listeners?
It's a blend from across South Australian vineyards,
yeah.
With a predominance in McLaren Vale and Barossa.
Right. Okay. Now, I just wanted to ask you, we had a conversation here on the show last week with Ross Brown of Brown Brothers.
Yeah,
Veronica Matheson chatted to him. They were having a big do up in the Northeast. To do with Prosecco. What's your take on the latest scenario with the Italians and the use of the name, etc.? Do you know any more?
So there's a complexity here, and just to bring everybody up to speed on our earlier conversations, the situation is that the Italians have tried to impose trade embargoes that restrict the Australian use of the name Prosecco. It's a different situation to Champagne, because Champagne has always been the name of the region and that should be protected, but the Italians did a sneaky thing and changed the name of the grape to Glera, when traditionally Prosecco has always been the name of the grape, just like Shiraz and Chardonnay and so forth, which everybody uses around the world. So from that point of view, the scenario is not just as simple as protecting the name of a region. it sets a precedent potentially where other regions could do the same and restrict others from using common grape names on wine labels, but which would of course be ridiculous. So the situation at the moment is that the Italians are still pushing for that to be restricted in the use of the name Prosecco on any Australian wines. Meanwhile, the Australian government has been admirably supportive of Wine Australia and the Prosecco growers, particularly in King Valley, where there's a strong centre and, of course, making the best of that style in Australia. And so at the moment, as I understand it from the latest discussions with those guys, we're sitting tight and we're okay, but I'm hoping that the government upholds their commitment to retaining what is rightfully an important name and a long-standing history here in Australian winemaking.
Yeah. Now, I know we've maybe been a little cheeky and named a road up there, Prosecco Road, but have the Italians actually renamed a geography over there to be called Prosecco? Because there was never a town called Prosecco, as I understood it.
No, that's right. So they've named the region. They've taken the name off the grape and called it Glera instead, which is not a particularly romantic name by any stretch,
no.
And then claiming it as a regional GI, effectively, geographical indicator, as we do in Australia,
right.
An appellation in the European sense.
Okay.
So that's the situation, convoluted and political as it is.
Mm. And do we have any other issues along those lines with grapes that are made here in Australia, grown here in Australia?
It's a good question. I'm trying to think through whether there's anything else that's current. Certainly in the past, there were a whole number of grape styles that we needed to change, regional styles, really. Port was one from Portugal, of course. We now call it Pointy in Australia. The Muscats and the Tokais as well, we no longer call them using those names because they are restricted to those regions in Europe. The term claret was claimed back by Bordeaux some years, somewhat controversially, because it's not really the name of a place at all.
Right.
But we've essentially honoured that one as well. I think Prosecco is different because that's the name of the grape. And so from that point of view, it's been a bit of a unique case.
Mm. I don't suppose we're going to buy any of those newly named grapes. We're going to use the one we've got here, are we?
Yeah, well, that's the suggestion.
Yeah. That sounds fantastic. So any other, perhaps you've got one other little tip you could give us. Is there something out there in the market right now that maybe people haven't tried that's a little bit different that you think might introduce?
Of new vintage wines coming through right now. Spring is wonderful because now's the time when the aromatic white producers start to lob their beautiful new creations into the market. And in recent weeks, I've had the privilege of tasting some of the first release Clare Valley Rieslings, for example. I love Clare Riesling.
Yep.
To me, the great names of Geoffrey Grosset and Stephanie Toole under her Mount Horrocks label are two of the best, and I love their 2018. So the Grossets are being released at the moment and the Mount Horrocks too, and the 2018, another vintage in a great lineup of Clare vintages, another vintage to absolutely enjoy in their youth as the weather starts to get warm.
Yeah, and that's obviously something we do need to think about just in storage terms as well. What's your suggestion on when to refrigerate and when not?
Yeah, we tend in Australia to drink our whites and our sparkling wines far too cold and our red wines too warm. When the Europeans talk about room temperature reds, they're talking about, you know, Paris room temperatures and not Melbourne in summertime room temperature. So I tend to chill things down a little bit before I serve them. So if it's a red wine, pop it in the fridge for half an hour. If it's a white wine, pull it out of the fridge half an hour early, or if it's a warm day, 15 minutes early. If you've got a little wine cabinet or a wine fridge, you can keep it 10 or 12 or 18 degrees. That's ideal because it gives you a good starting point. The wine's close to drinking temperature. If the reds are at 18 degrees and the whites are at 12,
Yep.
Place to start.
Okay. Well, as usual, Tyson, you've given us plenty to think about, maybe to drink about, and we really appreciate your time and energy that you give to us here on the show, mate, and we'll look forward to chatting with you next month.
Always a pleasure to chat, Graham. All the best.